All right, as Carlos Rodon getting the ball today against the A's. He did pitch against them earlier in the year. By the way, these teams are 1-1 in the two games they split. Pinder hit that home run in the first inning, and the A's won the second game 1-0. But Rodon pitched a good game in the first game. All right, joining us, Susan Slusser of the Chronicle. Susan, how are you today?
I'm great, Marty. How are you doing?
Very well. How is it coming back to Oakland for you? And I'll tell you this. You know, I've done the shows for 25 years, and I did the A's pregame till 09. I still have trouble when I have to say A's, Giants, Giants, A's. I get confused. How about you?
It's a little weird being back here. Things have changed a little bit. So far, the biggest change for me, besides there's a lot of new faces, is that the clubhouse is now the old Raiders locker room, which is crazy.
They went from this
tiny little cramped old one to now the old locker room's the weight room. So they've got actually like a decent sized weight room instead of a crammed little weight room. And they've got a huge, enormous locker room. So that's kind of fun. But, you know, they're still, you know, I chit-chatted with Stephen Vogt, kind of waiting to see Jed Lowry if he's around. And, you know, I still know quite a few people over here. It's also very weird that Steve Vucinich is not here because, you know, he was the fixture forever. But I saw him when we were in Arizona, so I'll take it.
Yeah. Tomorrow, actually, Ken Corico will be on with us later to talk about it, but there is a Hall of Fame, an Oakland A's Hall of Fame celebration tomorrow.
Yeah, that should be fun. I really like that they're doing that, and they've done a really good job in, you know, putting, you know, sort of the going, getting guys from various different eras and honoring all sorts of people, and today they're honoring Ray Fosse, which I absolutely love. Who does not, you know, appreciate what Ray meant to this organization, both as a player and, of course, as you know, one of the best and most longstanding broadcasters in Bay Area history.
Well, I love it. I'm glad that they're doing that for Ray. Well, this all of a sudden, this series, now the Bay Bridge series always has a little bit of oomph to it, but all of a sudden for the Giants, it actually becomes important because, look, they should win, obviously, with Rodon and Webb pitching against Waller, and I'm not even sure who pitches tomorrow. But, you know, they're at this stage of the crossroads a little bit. You're 7 back in the loss column. You don't want to go further back.
Yeah, I agree. But I remember we had this same sort of conversation after they got swept in L.A. and then they went to Arizona. Like, you know, hey, this is weirdly kind of an important series mm-hmm. for them. These are the sort of teams they need to beat. And they struggled with Arizona. So, you know, it's hard to say a two-game series is meaningful, but considering where they are right now, honestly, they just need to win games. It almost doesn't even matter. They need to beat the teams they should beat. They need to beat the teams that are above them. They need to just start winning games. It's starting to get a little dicey for potentially any sort of even the third wild card spot.
Well, you have 5 teams ahead of you, and with losses ranging from 43 to 48, and you're at 55. So things can happen quickly here, and they've got to get it together. But Rodon goes today. And I know you've been on all week long, and it's been great to hear you. But what do you think? I mean, were you shocked, surprised, mildly surprised that Rodon is still here?
I wasn't once the Phillies acquired Syndergaard. I think they were probably the team that I was hearing was at that point probably the most realistic destination. And I'm not sure if it was the package or if they just preferred Syndergaard or, you know, who knows. But at that point I thought, you know, the Giants were pretty clear when they talked to teams from what I understand. Is, you know, it wasn't a salary dump and they weren't going to take, you know, less than what they felt was full value for a guy who's an all-star and a horse and immediately would become a 1 or 2 even on a contending team. And I think they just weren't getting those kind of offers they want. Obviously, they weren't getting the kind of offers they wanted. And I think they feel like, hey, hang on to him. You know, even if he exercises his ability to opt out, they can make him a qualifying offer. He goes elsewhere. They get a pick for him. Or maybe they talk to him about an extension or, you know, there's a whole range of things that could happen from here. And also, it does allow them maybe a little more leeway to try to sneak into that last wild card spot if they have, you know, trading him was pretty much going to be the white flag. And they can at least still say maybe they've got a little bit of a shot here. I don't know how much of one, but he helps.
How do you feel about it? I was pretty adamant that he should be traded and not walk away without getting anything because, I don't care what it was, minor leaguers, even for 2 months, you could get something. He was the plum on the market when it was all said and done. How do you feel about it?
Well, you have to kind of look at some of the other trades that happened right before then. And, you know, he wasn't going to get what a Castillo got, obviously, because Castillo has years beyond this. Same with Montas. So a little bit of a different category. But, you know, you don't just give a guy away who's got that kind of pedigree. I just, you know, if you're getting sort of mediocre offers, that's not, they didn't need to do that. And, you know, honestly, they got a haul for Darren Ruff. I was surprised, you know, that they got four players for Darren Ruff, including, you know, a big league corner infielder who's much younger. So kind of a little bit of a change of scenery maybe for both J.D. Davis and Darren Ruff. But, you know, for the Giants sort of internally, that almost set like a very high bar for what they're looking for in exchange. And then they, you know, they trade three guys off the IL, which I can't ever remember happening before at the trade deadline. So I'm kind of astonished about that. And that's sort of, some of that is just found money, you know.
So is there a disappointment in Farhan not being more aggressive? Because I'm not sure, was he a buyer or a seller? I don't know what he was.
I think he was looking at a wide range of things. And, I mean, I think he should, right? Because, you know, the Giant situation is sort of tenuous, I guess the best way I could put it. But, you know, they inquired on Soto. I think they would have done it if they could. I think it was very clear that the Nationals identified the Padres prospects as the ones they wanted pretty quickly. And the fact that they decided not to tie a, you know, taking on a large salary as part of it, I think that kind of sunk the Giants' chances of getting Soto too, because they certainly could have done that. They might not have had the same sort of prospect package, but they could have absorbed a lot of salary. But they did call. So I think there were probably things that they were looking at to upgrade that didn't quite pan out. And I think there were certainly things with Rodon that didn't pan out. But, yeah, I'm a little surprised that Peterson was not dealt. They have an awful lot of sort of DH-type guys. Obviously, they trade Ruff, but they've been talking a lot about getting the defense a little better. And I thought that there would be a lot of interest in Peterson just because of his track record down the stretch and in the postseason and what he brings to a contender, you know, excellent platoon player and pinch hitter and experience and a winner. And I'm really surprised that nobody really pursued him as vigorously. He's been very off the last month for sure. But that one surprised me more than anything.
Boy, good to talk baseball. Susan, I always enjoy talking ball with you on these weekends. But look, here's the Padres. As you said, you know, Soto goes to the Padres with Josh Bell. The Dodgers come in and win four straight. They've probably got the two best players in baseball in Mookie Betts and Freddie Freeman. And here are the Giants all of a sudden, 51-55. So how do you assess where they are, even fan-wise, or where the franchise is vis-a-vis these other teams? Because, you know, they're looking up at them right now.
Yeah, I mean, there's not any star power on this Giants team. I mean, I think we all know that. It's pretty obvious. That's why I was kind of beating the Soto drum so much. It would have been, you know, kind of what they need. Now, I'm pretty sure in this offseason the Giants are going to go after some big-name free agents. They really have to. Partly for that reason, to get a little more excitement, to get fans, you know, really more vested in sort of a bigger name. They've got the money to do it. Everybody points at Aaron Judge. At this point, if you can't get Soto, Judge is the guy you kind of have to get. That is going to be a whopper of a contract, obviously. But I think they're going to explore probably some interesting trades in the offseason. I'm going to be fascinated. Yeah, this was a little bit of a lackluster trade deadline for the Giants, but they're kind of been a lackluster team this year. What are they? Are they a playoff team? They're certainly not the 107 win team. We all keep comparing them to that year's team, and there's just, honestly, it's pointless at this, you know, at this stage. They're not that team remotely. So it's kind of hard to get a grasp on them, but I think they still have enough talent that if they can somehow get it together, they could at least make life a little uncomfortable for some of the teams above them. And I think if I'm the Giants, I take that as a win. But yeah, they need some star power. They need some excitement. They're not going to get the kind of players that the Dodgers and Padres have anytime in the next few years, but they could get one or two and make things a little more interesting.
What do you think of Gabe Kapler snapping and getting into it with Phil Cuzzi and his first ejection as a San Francisco Giant manager? And at the end of the heck, they lost set 8 straight to the Dodgers and 11 straight in the National League West. And he sort of snapped. What do you think of that?
Yeah, I liked it, and I certainly understand why he was ticked. I mean, he says that because he came over and basically – was basically trying to tell him how to do his job. And Kapler's like, look, I got this under control. Like, my player, I'm going to handle it. I think the umpires really overreached. There was no need for it, really. I was a little bit amused that Garcia did that. Yeah, sure, okay, you could say it's taunting, but it was such mild taunting. And, we all know the Dodgers have been thumping them. The Giants are sick of seeing all their many little celebrations. Guy blows off a little steam like that. He didn't show him a middle finger. He didn't call him any bad names. He just, he's like, hey, he hit a homer off me 2 weeks ago, and that's what he did, so that's what I did, which kind of made me laugh a little. I think the umpiring crew, all they have to do is kind of wander over to the dugout and say, like, everybody calm down. Let's knock this off. There was no need for any ejection. There certainly wasn't any reason to, as Kapler said, scold Kapler. My goodness. I think that was mishandled.
Yeah, the game has changed. And Phil Cuzzi, of course, is always in the middle of something with the Giants over these years. Believe me, anytime you see Phil Cuzzi, it's going to be trouble. But look, remember Fernando Rodney? He used to shoot the arrow in the sky. Remember that? After he'd strike you out down the inning. So Garcia walks off and taps his helmet because that's what the Dodgers do.
Yeah.
Not even when they get a big hit. When they get any hit, they do it.
Yeah, I know. It's pretty absurd. And I do understand what Kapler was saying. He said his real problem there was kind of the stare down. I think he felt that was maybe a little bit over aggressive and a little across the line. And that I can see. That's the sort of thing that maybe potentially can escalate things. But that's where, when you're the umpiring crew, that's where you say, everybody take a deep breath, settle down. They issued warnings to both benches. That
was
just so unnecessary. Absolutely absurd. So, I think that, honestly, people probably don't even, barely notice if the umpiring crew had just gone over and said, hey, I know you got it under control, Gabe, but let's everybody just kind of chill.
Yep. Yeah, Phil Cuzzi and the other guy, the plate umpire, was the guy who massaged Bumgarner's hand earlier this year. So what a crew.
Very, very bizarre. That was the crew chief, Dan Bonino,
We'll have to watch them the next time. Well, all right, so some players should be coming back this weekend. I assume, everyone's coming off the DL. They got a lot of moves to make.
They do. I mean, they've got 4 guys coming off between, theoretically. I'm throwing Longoria in there because usually when they say somebody might, it usually means somebody will. But obviously you got Crawford, you got Estrada, you got Peterson, and probably Longoria in 2 days. So, there's some pretty obvious moves that they'll make to get guys in, VR comes off, et cetera. But there is probably going to be one, potentially outfield spot or extra player kind of spot that I can't figure. Usually the way these things work when I start going like, oh, they're going to have to make a tough decision between like Lamont or Luis Gonzalez, somebody else winds up getting hurt, which invariably seems to be the case. You hope that's not what makes the move, but they could be forced into a very interesting roster decision here for sure.
Yeah, you're exactly right. I have Gonzalez with a question mark because somebody is going to go on the injured list. Trust me. that's the way it always ends up. Someone has a headache or a pulled muscle or something's going to happen.
Yeah. Lower back stiffness.
Right, lower back spasms. Yeah. That's a popular one. They got Jake McGee traded or released. What can I tell you about that? But, they don't have enough left-handed pitching right now. They have 2 left-handed pitchers, and if you use one of them in the 5th inning, you're in trouble.
Yeah, it's funny. Jose Alvarez's injury kind of went under the radar a little bit. Mm-hmm. But the fact that it's gotten very loud here, and I'm going to try to maybe sneak into the corridor a little bit. I think that went a little bit under the radar, but he did some nice work for them last year. And really, he's basically been out for the season and is expected to be kind of out for the season. When he was pitching, he wasn't effective because of the injury. So you're right. That has been – I really thought they would upgrade the bullpen. Now, they did get a left-hander in the Rust deal. We might see him at some point. I have no idea how to pronounce his name. But I suspect that he's somebody that they have earmarked for maybe coming up at some point once they get him into the system and kind of work with him a little bit. But, yeah, it's definitely an area they could use a little bit of help.
Yeah, I'm going to let you pronounce his name, but it's spelled very differently. But he did pitch against the Giants earlier, and you remember in the last Met game, and he gave up about 8 runs in an inning and a third. So we'll see. Look, I like J.D. Davis, and I've said this on the show. I said, look, the guy played in New York for 3 years, and they didn't run him out of town. So he's got to have something, and I think he's got nice power from what we've seen so far.
Yeah, and he's a Northern California guy. You know, he's probably a little bit better in most areas than Ruff, and younger, you know, five or 6 years younger. Better defender, a little more versatile, maybe not quite the same power as Ruff, but he does have some power. I like this, you know. Sorry, again, getting 4 guys for Ruff, including a big league player who essentially fits the bill. You're really not losing much at all, you know, and if you're looking at even that as a one-on-one swap, Ruff or Davis, but getting a couple other guys too, my goodness.
Yeah, the Mets are going for a pennant, and they want Ruff with Vogelbach in there to do that DHing. So good for him. Good for Darren Ruff. I'm glad that he's made a career coming back from Korea. He's made a career from coming back from there. So good for him. So what do the Giants have to do here? What facet of the game? They still pitch pretty well. You get a lead after 6, they're 40-2. What do they have to do to just start winning games again?
Yeah, I mean, they've been almost all year. When they get a good pitching performance, they don't hit. When they hit, and the starting pitching's okay, the bullpen's not good. When everything else is pretty good, the defense makes a couple really bad mistakes or base running. I mean, they just seem like they never click on all cylinders. I don't know how they ensure that they do that. Now, they've taken some steps to try to improve the defense. At least, you know, I think, you know, bringing up Bryce Johnson was one of those. I think he probably winds up going, you know, back out for Peterson or somebody like that. This is not a one- or two-player fix. And I don't know how you take a team with basically that many DHs and turn it into a good defensive team. Now, some of the mental mistakes have to get eliminated, and that's really more than anything when you're looking at the roster crunch, where it might hurt Luis Gonzalez, even though he's been one of the few people that's consistently hit. He's, you know, the consistent base running mistakes are not something I think that they can tolerate.
Joey Bart had a great series against the Dodgers, I thought. Just a great series for him, and almost you had the feeling that he was sort of controlling the at-bat finally.
Yeah, he looks totally different. So much more relaxed. I think the kind of simplified swing has helped. But more than anything, it was that mental break. I think that, you know, kind of took the weight of the world off him. You know, he was trying to do way too much, overthinking everything, trying to take so many different pieces of advice into every at-bat. He looked paralyzed. He came back looking really different. And, you know, the strikeouts are down. The hits, more hits. He's getting on base more. He looks very good behind the plate. So I'm glad that they have stuck with him, and I'm really going to be interested to see how they, you know, what they do with that position in the future. I suspect they re-sign Kurt Cofalli in the offseason, and it will be back to being this, you know, that tandem, which I really liked a lot.
Well, you think the Austin Wins era will end, huh?
Well, I mean, who knows? Maybe they keep him around in
AAA. I'm only kidding.
I know. He's for what they needed, Austin Wins fits the bill. And I have got zero problem with Austin Wins.
Okay. Now, look, he gives you a tough at bat. I will say that. That's for sure. Hey, we lost Vin Scully this week, and you've been around the game for so long. Your thoughts on Vin Scully?
I mean, I really probably can't put it any better than so many other people, especially people who knew him. I mean, Ken, you're going to have to talk to Ken Koraki. You know, really, I think Vin Scully was his role model, which to me, that tells you everything you need to know, because Ken's as good as it gets. And Vin was the greatest. So right there, the legacy is going to continue on and on with great broadcasting, because everyone kind of tried to emulate him or take something from the way he did things. And the best part about him was just such a gentleman and a class act and the face of a franchise, a great, great storied franchise forever. I mean, we're not going to see that again, but it's a sad year. Losing Vin Scully and Roger Angel in the same year is really difficult.
No, you're right. I saw Vin Scully, believe it or not, Susan, when I was 10 years old at Ebbets Field. I saw Vin Scully. It's true.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
True. Yeah, last night the ceremony was beautiful. It brought some tears to my eyes last night.
Yeah, I only saw clips, but man, it looked beautiful.
Yeah, they did a nice job. All right, thanks so much for being on today, and enjoy being back in Oakland, and let's see what happens. It's going to be an interesting weekend. Thanks, Susan.
It will, for sure. Awesome. Thanks. Bye, Marty.
All right, be well. All right, that is Susan Slusser of the Chronicle. All right, Bill is up next. He's got Brody Brazil. We'll get a little better perspective on where the A's are at right after these messages.